This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net.
I'm going to quote from Bonnie Greer's a biopic on Langston Hughes, The Value of Contradiction. It's just a poem here. Goodbye, Christ. Goodbye, Christ, Jesus, Lord, God, Jehovah. Beat it on away from here now. Make way for a new guy with no religion at all. A real guy named Marx, communist, Lenin, peasant, Stalin, worker, me. I said me. And I'm going to quote from Adam Daly. Hi, Adam, if you're listening. In the foreword to the third part of his trilogy, he considers himself to be an outsider writer. This is called The Reigns of the Transfinite. This is just a prologue, his ramble. He wearies of the umpteenth rites of passage debut, the coming of age drama, the relationship saga, the egregious epic, the burning issue serial, the thriller that doesn't thrill, the horror that doesn't horrify, the comedy that isn't funny, the fantasy that farts, the fetishistic historical fiction, the stale science fiction, the psychological study that plumbs the shallows, the experiment that goes fut, the entertainment that doesn't even entertain, the satire that doesn't sting, never mind bite, the soporific series and all the Heinz 57 varieties of popular art, pot boilers and candy floss crap masquerading as cultural. And this last word, it's his original manuscript, is blocked out, it ends in GS.
Cheers.
Cultural imaginings? I don't know.
Okay.
Adam, what is it?
Adam's not here.
Oh, that's true.
Who are you?
Bob Parks.
Okay, thank you.
It's all right. $10.
I was going to introduce you, but you just sort of leapt straight in.
Well, as usual.
This is Bob Parks is with this week's guest for the first time since Christmas, I think.
Yeah, it is.
And basically, you're going to interview yourself today because
you don't know what it's all about.
I have no idea what you're going to say or do.
Well, our training at art school was to work to not have preconceived ideas, so I've come without any preconceived ideas as well. Anyhow, I'm convening a forum. There's a place, Valtarina's, which is a continuation of the old Colony Club where Francis Bacon and that man. It's out by Tower Hill. That's anyhow.
But it used to be in Soho.
Used to be in Soho.
On a first floor, you'd go up a flight of steps.
That's fun.
I can't remember, it was Frith Street or Greek Street.
Yeah, something like that. Anyhow, Sophie wrote a book about the history of it and inspired her to open this club, which is fantastic.
So have they done it as a replica of the old?
No, it's completely new. Okay. It's based on, who's the scat singer who came over? He used to back Charlie Parker in the 40s, his trio, and it was one of his sayings, Valtarina's. He had a big hit with Cement Mixer.
Slim Gaillard.
He's the one who inspired this. Okay. And she knew him.
Oh, right.
Hi, Sophie, if you're listening in. Okay, right. This is the forum I'm going to try to convene there. It's one Tuesday, either October or November. And anyone out in Radioland who wants to come along, you're welcome too. So you'll get the contact through the station. 5 to 10. We're trying to... I've got Hi there, Sal La Bruja, Sal the Witch, is my now publicist, and she's sending out all the stuff. So I've got it all set up. Now, the project is as follows. I'm giving it the overall title, and Adam's given me this freedom to do so, of The Reigns of the Transfinite. Transfinite being Transfinite Calculus, which
Adam Daly. He wants to have a back seat or something?
That's right. He wants to be in the shadows.
So perhaps we shouldn't have named him at all.
Yeah. Well, this comes to the title, this character, this archetypal performance art piece, No Name Now, who comes out of his book. He's born of a witch, and into adolescence he proceeds to eat the mother and then decimate the whole of England. This is just like Outcast Burden. Where'd you go for it? He ends up in the third volume, in the multiverse. But it's because he's philosophically trained, Adam, it goes beyond the boundaries of what's considered or whatever. Anyhow, so the name of this, because I've got the training with Strasbourg and the literalism to play something with a bit of scope for a change. So I'm taking on board this No Name Now character, who is this sort of... Anyhow, I've been trying to get a show together. Now, I mustn't name this, but I will, but I can't, and pretend I haven't named it. Initially, the Serpentine Gallery, but James, hi, James, if you're listening, he said that's a long, long way off. So I'll put that in the shadows, I'll kick that into the long grass. Anyhow, so I'm looking for a venue. I've got a contact with I don't know what they call them, conceptual artists. I call myself a performance artist. I don't want to call myself an artist because that's... contradiction in terms nowadays.
What's a contradiction?
Artist.
Okay.
Don't go there. Don't worry. Take another program. Okay. So this character, No Name Now, he's unearthed something which is very interesting. It was a movement, I think, in the early 20th century or the late 19th, the name of God as God. And it was a Russian movement that was actually... the Russian Orthodoxy had pushed to one side. They wouldn't identify with it, but it makes a lot of sense. And Stomroff in Brussels made the astute observation that they mean the same thing. The name of God is God, i.e. it's in the name, not in what the name refers to as God, which is very... suprematist. And No Name Now is the same, because No Name Now means he's transcended name. And the other one, where the name doesn't refer to a phenomenological object, but just to the word itself, as in the mark, which came out of from the narrative of the 19th century to the fact that the painting's flat surface covered in colours in a certain order. So it's the mark rather than the what is read into it. Now, here's a way into this forum that I've planned, having a word with Chris Guinness, who's actually in the line of the Guinnesses, but he's a retired vicar in the in the village that I live in Sway in the New Forest. Yeah. Now, it's a little difficult. I looked for advice from my colleague over there whether or not I can talk about this, but it was the ending for the movie that I'd planned that I'll steer clear of that. Anyhow, what's his name? I discussed it with Chris, the vicar, and he took it right on board. It's no problem. So he's quite good. Anyhow, in a conversation where I brought up this whole topic of this thing, he was talking about pantheism, because this is, I'm coming from a broader sort of pantheistic point of view. And he talked about the pan in pantheism, you see, as the point of where he'd move away from it as a Christian. And this is my reflection on what he said. I just read it out. Is the pan, his reference pan, in pantheism, its defining feature? As with Ravel and Debussy, it emerges as a bucolic feeling. Or something a little less bacchanalian and more pastoral, Holston, Vaughan Williams. So this is a tradition where I'm coming from. So, again, makes it actually a little bit ungraspable, this idea of attacking pantheism, which I think probably Blake also embraced, from a sort of Christian perspective, i.e. that it's kind of got an evil, kind of bacchanalian, kind of wild side, because the English take on it, you know, if you listen to the Ravel, for example, which tends to be a little bit sort of I don't know what the word is, a bit sort of, well, bucolic, a bit sort of ritualistic, a bit sort of Goya-esque, kind of a bit sort of, you know, a wild abandon, sort of, whereas the English is a little bit more sort of restrained. Like, you compare French cathedrals with English cathedrals. The French cathedrals are just fantastic. They go up, and whereas English are studied and good craftsmanship and all that sort of thing.
Ravel was Spanish, wasn't he?
He was Spanish, French-Spanish.
Okay.
And Debussy also, not quite as much as Ravel, but he was on that side. Mm. Whereas it's Vaughan Williams, and it's, you know, or Elgar, very much.
Yeah.
That English kind of thing, because it's got a sort of you know, safety about it.
Yep.
It doesn't quite take its feet off the ground. Mm. And it's that sort of thing which makes it, gives it an elusive quality still, and you're not quite sure. Kind of like within Anglicanism, the church, not that in a political sense, because now the politician's taken over this adjective, the church. The remit of the church in Anglicanism takes in agnosticism and pretty much everything into under its umbrella. Mm. And so it's quite a broad point of view. You know, it was the Bishop of Durham who almost was atheistic. I don't know. There was some tradition, but he was managed to be pulled in within the. I know this is probably heresy. Or this is probably. But it's the there's a sense of humour about it, or a sense of self that doesn't exist in other sort of religious things. There's a sort of a toleration for difference, I think, and you know, taking advantage of that. And so under that, the project is something very ambitious that. Which a lot of things don't seem to address now, which is like everything, atheism, the range of the transfigured calculus, and I can't remember the name of the mathematician, but certainly Einstein had an angle on transfinite calculus. His one was an agnostic view. It wasn't, because he in a sense said, well, there might be something there, whereas the mathematician said, well, there isn't anything else. This Mikhail Tombrov has studied, his work is basically conceptual, working with Einstein and these different people, but the link between mathematics and mysticism. And his art looks nothing like mine, but I want to exhibit with him, because mine is self-indulgent, encaustic, kind of subjective self, you know, whereas his is, mine's in a sort of an agnostic or spiritual stance, and a space to put the two together. And it sort of goes into areas that, not that much explored, really. And what then I can bring to bear is everything on myself. Well, I don't want to say too much, because it's the forum that I'm convening where I want to discuss this, you see. The point of it is to go without any preconceived ideas and to have...
Does the forum exist already?
No.
No.
I've got Sal. Hi, Sal. Is working as my, almost a secretary, actually, collating all the different, when people are free and whether or not we can meet on this time and all that time. So we're going to try and get the whole thing.
How many people?
I don't know. It's limitless. The point is, one of Sal's friends, you'll know this guy. He's the one who's got taken over Pirate Station off of Lowestoft, who's got his own monetary system, and he's got his own language. He's famous. He's got 100,000 website, and I'm going to do his portrait in return for the 100,000 website. He's going to let me have access for more publicity. You'd know him, but okay. I can't think of his name. The Prince of somebody, it's called. He's quite famous all over the place. Anyhow, he came along to the opening. The other guy who was really pleased to come along was this guy called... Steve Mikhalev, who went to school with Mark Perry, who started the first punk fanzine, Sniffing Glue. And this has... Their music crits were authoritative in a way that nothing prior or nothing subsequently has impressed me at all. In whatsoever. They're completely authoritative and... I felt when I met him, it was this. I didn't meet him there, but there was a unveiling of the. Well, it's not a block, because it's horizontally set. They identified London Fields, the area where Blake's body was, and he should have come, but he wasn't there. But anyhow, I got through to him, and he invited me to go to
When you say Feltham. His body was, what do you mean?
They knew it was somewhere in London Fields, but they didn't know exactly where. And this guy had been working.
There's a sort of monument in Bunhill Fields.
That's the one, yeah.
Bunhill Fields.
Bunhill
Row, yes. Yeah. Okay.
And they didn't know exactly where it was, but now they've identified it exactly.
Right.
And they've got the... It's on the floor. Someone's carved a thing.
Yeah.
Anyhow, he then invited me to the Blake Fest down at Feltham, where Blake moved on to after he left London. And he found it more spiritual than London. And we went to the cottage. And I came out of the pub as one of the... Because he's also arrested for sedition there. And I came out of the pub as one of the soldiers who arrested him, and I used my method acting and scared everybody, actually, because brought my method acting to life as the thing. And anyhow, Stephen, we became sort of friendly there, so hopefully he'll become on board for the forum.
Is this book you have with you?
This one is The Punk Kings of Dyslexia by Steve Mikalev. It's just the history of how he got sacked after 3 years, I think it was, or something like that. And but they combined editing it for those times. And it's just the story of the creation with all the groups, the Damned, the Sex Pistols, and where they started out. You know, very interesting.
Yeah. So he's part of your forum?
Yep.
Okay. Is it by invitation only? Or?
No, anyone can come.
So how will people know when the forum is starting?
Go to Foot Arenas. I mean, it might be noted there. I'm not sure quite how to set it up in that kind of way out to Radioland. Could people communicate with Wavelength through you?
Possibly.
Okay, if anyone's out there's interested, send an email to William English at... you said it, didn't you?
Asking, really.
Yeah, he said possibly.
But you're suggesting the best way would be for them to go to Foot Arenas.
When we get something set up, when Sophie Parkin, co-owns it, and Sal LaBruja, who's my sort of publicist, or taking care of that, if we can work out some way, at present we're just people I know, and I've got about 50 people here that I've got, you know, listed down.
But why would people want to be involved in it?
It's my belief that there's an aspect of life which I was born after the Second World War, 1947. Those 3 years, 1945, 46, 47, we were called Generation X. There was a book written about it, this black guy, and I haven't been able to trace it, but we were the original Generation X. Now, we were the first generation not to look like our parents. No, everyone says that, but we really were. And as a consequence of the two world wars, the ones who were born after the First World War, Ginsburg and co, 1920, then went on to become the beatniks. We went on to become the hippies. So there's two sort of counterculture, something about being immediately after in the shadow of a world war. Both opened the world up to everybody kind of thing, rather than a nationalistic sense. We had very much a world view. And a belief, shared belief in world government. In fact, John Carter, I don't know, I shouldn't think he's listening, but he sent me just a little plaid on 1996 interview with Tiny Tim. Just incredible. The guy is a genius. I just. Fantastic. If one could have a hero, this guy is where it's at. But, very, very intense. Individual that I very much look up to. Anyhow, we had the sexual revolution in the 60s, and following that, it was supposed to lead to the spiritual revolution, which has yet to happen. Now, why it's so controversial is because it believes that they doesn't believe in any. Well, it says that there is no answer to anything, you see, and people always want answers. Why it's had kind of been floundering is because it believes in not believing.
Right.
And
so you want to create a union of non-believers?
In that sense, yeah. But it's more subtle than just non-belief because it includes everything. So I'm including atheists, believers and everything in a sense of not...
With a view to something?
With a view to addressing life in a way that I don't see the media. I don't see any artists or anybody who seem to be wholly, well, lesser or greater degree interested in money rather than liberating ideas.
Hmm.
And I'm more concerned with actually pushing those. Well, what you see, again, it's my view that 1918 saw the end of modernism because the First World War, people are stupid enough to kill each other on a global level. Nobody wants to think anymore. So basically, there has been no original thinking since 1918. I mean, the stuff that sort of purports to be. So, but I'm trying to get right back to the... It comes out of the symbolists in the... you know, Baudelaire and then on to Rambo and all that gang.
Hmm.
Radical thinkers and who unfortunately produced them. Oh, who's the guy who was the inspiration of Hitler and Mussolini? The Italian.
Oh, D'Annunzio.
D'Annunzio. And my man is Malevich. So I'm coming. The two aspects, I'm a Stalinist, I've come clean here.
Ah.
And I've written a 100-page essay on from Gustav Moreau, symbolist, to Kazimir Malevich, the unexplored side of totalitarianism. And I see two arms of totalitarianism. There's a physics formula that power equals energy over time. So power, that aspect of coming out of totalitarianism, has always been enforced through power, through force, rather. So dictatorial systems have always been brutally, you know. There's the other side is energy, which is powered by human enthusiasm, which I call the spiritual side of totalitarianism, Malevich's one, that's pretty much unexplored.
It sounds a bit like sort of North Korea or something.
No, I think he's more like... Although I got thrown out of the SWP meeting because I was arguing a support for Pol Pot.
Right.
And that they couldn't handle that. And now I'm trying to come into the Morning Star group in Southampton who aren't talking to me.
But didn't Stalin and Pol Pot, didn't they sort of slaughter millions of people?
That's their line, that's their heritage. But the ideology behind it... Pol Pot was in the Sorbonne studying phenomenology before he came across. So my point is that it wasn't Pol Pot at all. He was a product. He was, i.e., a product of American interventionism. Nixon bombed the forest people, killing a quarter of a million people when they weren't at war with anyone. And that soured because they were spiritual. So they jumped right into the Khmer Rouge. Now, the Khmer Rouge comes out of Angkor. They call it Angkor. And it's the power source from the Khmers in the 12th century who disappeared onto another plane of existence. And the Oriental mind, this is a generalization, when Western people are threatened, they kill everyone in sight. When Oriental people are threatened, they kill themselves, you see. It's just a different... So it was a... What America initiated was a suicide, mass suicide, which was what... The killing fields were. I mean, it's portrayed as the fault of Pol Pot. No, the French...
But weren't they trying to wipe out the middle class?
Yeah, the same thing as Stalin was trying to do. They're killing all the kulaks off. No, well, yeah. the rich working class, actually. The point is that Marxism was designed for proletarian societies, not agrarian economies like Russia or China.
But how is that suicidal if you're killing out a class?
Well, it's suicidal if you look at it from the point of view of... This is the country that I represent. It's suicide for the idea of the country that you're killing half of your country off. The
but
people.
It's a sort of scorched earth policy, isn't it?
Sort of thing.
Where
yeah.
you're trying to create something else that comes out of that.
Mm.
I can't see how that's suicidal as much because you want to the people that are responsible for that want to survive.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, suicide. This is Strasbourg. If you try to kill yourself, nobody does that. It's not human nature to kill yourself. It's I'll show them, I'll kill myself. And, you know, to upset somebody else, you can't kill yourself, i.e. it's an impossibility psychologically because we're not hardwired to do that, to destroy ourselves, anybody. But
people do kill themselves.
They kill themselves, but not to kill themselves. They kill it to hurt someone else or to make a point of, you know, this anyhow, this is coming from Strasbourg. This is the way you play it. If you're an actor, a method actor, this is how you look for something, even if you like got to play. This was another point, actually, which is what the thing is to do with. It came up from a discussion. There was Black Nativity was on in London in the 50s. It was Langston Hughes actually did the, which is ironic because this poem was written in the 30s. So he came to script the story of the black nativity scene, and it was that was the time that gospel music got introduced to England. Now Yvette Carroll then did a sequel, which was Your Arms Too Short to Box with God, which was in LA in the 70s. I went to see it. Oh, 1982 actually. And in it, there was this black actor who portrayed the devil. And I got to thinking, because he did it so convincingly, that one suspect. Then the point is, no, I'm just acting it, right? So this is the freedom that actors have. They're, somebody who plays like terribly psychotic, you don't think they're psychotic, you think that's good acting kind of thing. Now, Chris Guinness drew this line that actually, if you go too far, you actually invoke the spirit of evil and you bring it down. And this is this whole area that I'm investigating. So it's quite a broad thing of interpretation of where spirituality is and where it's about, you know, on a meaningful level. Let's get into playing the first track and we can have a little...
you can have a break.
Yeah, we can both have a break, I think. So go with...
which one?
Let's go with Moses Sumner. I saw him at the Royal Festival of the Hall. Last week he was playing live. Very, very good. Californian, Los Angeles artist, singer.
Thank you.
Come around this side, William.
Okay. I must just say that I watched, there was a video accompanying that. It's a very strange video. I don't know if you've seen it. Sort of man rescues a mermaid from the rocks and carries her across a beach. And then she sort of batters him to death with a rock and drowns him.
Well, good for her.
Okay. Well,
come on over.
I'm coming around.
Hi, everyone in Radio Land. He's coming around now. I went to art school in Leicestershire, and William's from Leicester, and my tutor lives in Hallerton, which is Rutland.
Hallerton?
I
know Hallerton.
I know, that's why I brought you around. Now, this is Ken's work, and he died about 2 weeks ago, and Charlotte invited me up to there. I couldn't make the ritual, he wouldn't call it a funeral, because he's sort of pantheistic. Yeah, what is, he's his brother, he's pre-de-Rome. And, you know, like Henry Moore does, the point of the Moores isn't to be shown in a gallery. They're more how the dialogue that they establish with the trees and nature, they're more, it's not about them, but it's what they set free. Mm-hmm. And this is very much, it's sort of the spirit, the pastoral spirit in the English countryside. So this is Ken and one of his sculptures. Right. And he does things with the field and the churches,
right,
and you know, the outlines, the meadows, and he uses those motifs. He's very influenced by Samuel Palmer,
right.
And you see, here's a personification.
It's Hilton, almost right.
Yeah, and here's like the form in surrealism is actually a female nude, and here's the church that looks like a skull. So it's really personified it. But he'll take the clouds and he'll take sort of weather, and I've got something else I want to show you afterwards, but it's like, and that's even making it into a knot, the landscape. Mm. So you get the, anyhow, I want to show his stuff as the third component, but it needs, that's his pre-de-Rome piece.
Right.
And you see again the clouds and the church, and this is a paean to
Saint
Paul. Now, I wanted also to show you, because it was, Charlotte gave these to me while I was at Strasbourg, studying with E. Strasbourg. I did some sketches of the fellow actors. But the point is, with method acting, you are in character, and then afterwards the tutor asks you how much of what you were working for did you get, because you can't work directly for emotion. So how much of the heat or the colour of the place or the smell, how much of it got, or what you were working for sensorially. So I did drawings in oil pastels, as we were trained at art school to work with, of the actors in character. So I was drawing their persona. And it was just when colour photocopies came out. And so I sent them back to England. And Ken said they had a penetration on a human level. So I'm going to share just the few of the ones I did with William. Mm. He said that they were sort of expressive on a...
When did you do these?
1978.
Right.
And Ken suggested that I, from that, investigate portraiture, which is that was the direction. I mean, I'm pretty much an abstract artist. But with the 60s, working not to have preconceived ideas, I'll do anything. It's like this project, that I have got no idea whatsoever, and I want not to have any idea how it's going to turn out, because that would spoil it. So I'm not bringing the rhythm and blues feeling or anything like that today. So there's three composers, Charlemagne Palestine, as we'll conclude with his.
How does Palestine come into this?
Well, he's a friend of Alan Daly, who introduced me, and he had a show which you saw in Brussels, or you talked and referred to.
Yeah.
Not Brussels, in
Rotterdam.
But originally, I saw it in Brussels. They're poems that I wrote as well at the time, but anyhow.
It's quite curious, the business about Hallerton, because that was about 3 miles from the village where I lived, which was...
3 miles, really?
Tugby.
Where's it called?
Tugby.
Tugby.
Which was on the Uppingham Road.
Well, you were Rutland as well then?
No.
Because this is actually inside Rutland.
No, Hallerton's not in Rutland.
Isn't it? It's Leicestershire, is it?
Yeah. Still Leicestershire. Oakham was Rutland. That was going a bit further.
You go to Market Harborough to get there?
Yes.
When I got a taxi out from
there.
I'd never have got there otherwise.
Yeah. But you were at college in Leicester, weren't you?
From 66 to 69.
But did you explore the villages? Did you know the
villages? No, I only went up to see Ken. But who was there, which was very influential? It was for Ken, because he was my tutor. But at that time, At that time, Harry Subron came down from Leeds, and his right-hand man was John Thompson. And
they got for us a factory space, and we had like an area about 16 foot by 12 foot each in this factory space to work from. And that was in the last year we were there, and I think a bit of the year before that. And John then went on to Goldsmith to head the fine art department with that Canadian guy who got all the Brat Pack through.
Craig Martin.
Craig Martin, he was one of his staff. And John, I went down in 76, came over from LA to ask all about punk rock, because it was, you know, and he took me, he said, go to this record shop, and because he'd already had Malcolm McDowell, or whoever it was.
McLaren
came through, was one of his pupils, and he said, go to the shop. So I got The White Riot by the Clash, all those records, and I got the first four things of Sniffing Glue. That was where I got that from. So that's how that link. And, yeah, you know, right. And then I bought punk out to Beverly Hills, you see. Yeah. So I think I knew the guy, Darby Crash, who was in The Germs, The Spreading. Right. That was him. He is another famous suicider that, he was sort of spoke with him on the bus, the 91W that went up Sunset Strip. And used to get on that occasionally. Do you want to play another one now?
Shall we? What do you want to play next?
This one, Julius.
Julius Eastman.
That's the one, yeah.
With a title which I can't mention, but he can if he was here. But actually, it's an instrumental thing.
Yeah.
It has a word which isn't... politically. Which I'm not allowed to use.
No.
But
use your imaginations.
Yeah.
Okay. Crazy something. Right. Now,
so this is by Julius Eastman.
Yeah.
It seems to date from 1979.
Oh, okay. So you'll get the point when we finish off with Charlemagne, because he takes it a little further still. Now, talking with William before it, when we meet up at the... what's it called?
The shop?
Yeah.
The bookshop?
No, at the place we drink.
Costa.
So there he says, he might like to quote from Increasing Competence Through Collaborative Problem Solving, so we could get into that for the last 20 minutes, if you like.
Okay.
This will bring my teaching acumen. Because the point is that I really want to take this forum seriously, and I don't want it to be a big ego trip. So it's like, I genuinely want it to be whatever comes out of what we talk about. So here, this is a thing I've This is a point, a paragraph that we can discuss. Thus, consultation is here seen not as a process in which a professional acts as sole expert who provides others with solution. Instead, he acts as a non-directive facilitating fellow professional skilled in the art of sharing his experience and expertise in a process of joint exploration of a problem. Such collaborative exploration encourages others to develop their own sharing capability in a problem-solving framework to address existing problems as well as those that may yet arise. So it's basically the postmodernist, which is now doesn't exist according to who knows who. But anyhow, if there were such a thing in the distant past of postmodernism, identify commonality and celebrate difference. So basically, you come without bringing any baggage into a situation and with an open mind as possible, which no one, well, I don't have anyhow, but you work towards it. And whatever happens is where you take it. Shall we play Charlemagne for the rest of the program? No.
Okay, good. I like this.
You
piece.
Like the idea.
This is a good piece. This Julius Eastman, I like this.
Yeah, it's quite good, isn't it? Yeah. Let's go back to it. Take it up a bit. I've got more to say. Now, I got a friend. When I was at school, we used to go over with our soapboxes, because I was born in Southall, to the gollies, the golf links, the first and the second golf links. And the second gollies was particular. We, when it was snowing, there were hills there, so you could go in.
Where was this?
Where Southall borders with Hamwell.
Okay.
In West London. And the second golf links. And bordering the second golf links was this territory that was fenced off, but we wondered what it was. It turned out to be Helen's garden. You see, Helen Tyler, her father had a company there, they're Quakers, pictorial charts, educational charts. And then I met, I don't know how it was, that I bumped into her, actually. I remember the early one morning, the Caro sculpture, the red fire truck, you know, that sculpture with the in the red, and I fancied her friend who was with her. Anyway, Helen was there, and she's got the only thatched roof cottage in London, which is in Hanwell, and it's also where the well of Hanwell springs in her back garden. It's a wild place. It's almost an acre. It's a terrific place, which was this out of bounds. Anyhow, at the bottom of the garden is a big kind of hut, you know. And while we were at school, we pushed the theatre group. Oh, well, I did, anyhow. We devised. We had a religious and education teacher, Reverend Boggis, who was going on the Aldermaster marches. And each Easter, we were wondering whether he'd show up because he perhaps would be arrested. So we were all very excited. So we started going on the marches as well. And one year it actually went through Southall Park before it went. It was the last stop, 4 days of walking from Aldermaston to... I've forgotten what I'm talking about.
You started with something about school. And
school, yeah.
And seeing Helen Tyler, was it?
Yeah, right. This is Oh, I know. Then we got this... I got this idea, Theatre Today, using the piece logo, and a Theatre Today like that.
Hmm.
And it was I did it on the sand at Gower Peninsula, and it was really a big one. Anyhow, we got it was Centre 42, which a union thing, which each, because I knew Esther Jones on the Greater London Council. She was the mother of one of my mates at school, Bob Jones, and we put a bid on one of the columns, which raised the money for Chalk Farm for the roundhouse. So we got the support of the roundhouse, and we had pompous things like we consider Brecht to be at the very rear of the avant-garde. We formed this theatre group based on improvisation. We got Clive Exton came down and gave us a talk on improvisation and so on. So I went to about four or five. That was again, it was Helen's. And then later, for the Southall Carnival, the first one, I made like a float with my cousin Maureen, and the title was 2,000 years BC, 100,000, create a tomb for one, like the pharaoh. So I had my sister and cousin Maureen on this as a Nefertiti on a Egyptian throne that I'd made. And then 2000 AD, one man creates a tomb for 10 million with his skull exploding from a nuclear bomb blast in the thing. So great. And then the next year I did a 16-foot peace sign on the afloat going in the thing. And I made that in Helen's back garden. Now again, her brother, I don't know, it's inside. I saw these weird, wonderful pictures she'd painted. And he, on the floor, there was an Ornette Coleman cover. And I thought, this, and I listed it. And that was the second Bentalls in East Ealing, which is actually where Dusty Springfield worked. The Bentalls, there, that's where she started. Anyhow, just by there was a record shop. And I bought this, which was my second LP. The first was Charlie Parker, The Essential. And this was Ornette Coleman. I used to whistle Ornette Coleman on the way to school. Should I do it now? It goes,
yeah.
This is CNN. And I could do all the improvisations. And here I was whistling this gaily on the way to Southall Grammar School. And much later, Helen was at Leicester College of Art in the year above me. Again, this is another coincidence.
Yeah.
And then I crossed, paths crossed.
Yes, crossed paths.
Nice. Yeah, why not? And so she's back in touch. As she put forward, what's the word when people put money forward for you?
Like sponsoring?
Sponsored me for £1,000 because I needed it just very recently. Mm. So I had, when I was jogging, because I live in the New Forest, happened upon an owl that had just been hit. I don't know, it was in the road. And I got it taxidermied for £300. I got it at the right hand. And then for some dry mounting, another £700. So she sponsored these 15 pieces that I've got ready to show as a part of this show, Reigns of the Transplanet.
So it's literally it's a stuffed owl.
Mm. And he'd done work for Damien Hirst, this guy, because he was the leading English taxidermist. And so I got it all done. It's there. It looks really good, man. Okay, so that's Helen, and that's that. Yeah. That's all of this.
What else have you got? What's the red folder?
Red folder?
You've got a red booklet there somewhere.
Where?
Underneath the brown packages.
Here?
Yeah.
Just my sketches.
Ah.
Do you want to have a look at some of them?
Yeah.
Do you want to come around again?
Okay.
He's coming around, listeners. Just imagine now he's getting up from the thing. Now, this is what I've done over the last few years. I've lost some of them, but here. That was in Kew Gardens. Trees. And here we go. This is the mural I wanted to show in Canvey that they wouldn't allow me to show in my local church because the colours were too bright. This is my mum before she died. And this is this idea of, sea, and this is with the London outline, just with the idea of this thing. This Darius. I'm really, as an abstract artist, and sort of a combination of a bit of each. Self-portrait, psychedelic. That was when I went to Russia for Christmas.
Why is that a self-portrait?
This?
What's this red blob here?
Well, that's my, I don't know. I think I wore a little thing when I walked around this big nose, this character, which was a persona. This is a persona that I'm updating to No Name now. And it's an amoral artist, which represents everything, which represents the 30 years of 25-hour murderous psychotic rages that I went through. And so this is raw material again for this project, which I mean, it's a lovely sort of thing that I want.
What's this one here?
That was when I went to Russia. I went to Moscow for a day at Christmas time about 4 years ago, and I had a delicious Georgian meal,
right.
And that was just delicious. This is out on the Isle of Wight, the Benedictine monastery. That was in the monastery, just sort of colours. Self-portrait. This is the. This is where we say. Okay. I did a sketch. That's
Do you feel the need to stay in this monastery?
Yeah, it's great, man. I love religion. It's fantastic. Religion's all right. It's when the words come in.
Stalin wanted to be a priest.
I know. Hitler wanted to be an artist. Well, so did Winston Churchill. Right. This is, again, I can't talk about it because it's rude, I suppose. So this is the one of the pictures in the series. That's like Malevich's Red Square, only with a few additions that you can see there. These are some sketches I did in Paris, because when in doubt, one of my tutors said, go to Paris, which I tend to. I tend to. This is a tree in the back garden. And this is I went to the Three Choirs Festival this year. It was in Hereford, so I did some sketches about town, of the cathedral, and when somebody I got. These are the local heroin addicts. I did a, and this is my show at the Gallery of Everything.
Right.
And the blow of that. And
just sketch the heroin addicts.
Yeah. Well, they're great friends. One only had one leg. I said, why have you only got one leg? He said, heroin. Yeah. Okay. I've got my poem there. There's another one I wanted, but I can't. So there you go. And these are the various things.
If you want to play...
Yeah, let's go into...
Do you want to have Charlemagne Palestine?
Yeah, let's play out with Charlemagne.
Should we play some of that?
Yeah. Play the whole thing.
This is one side of Charlemagne Palestine.
Well, cheerio, everybody, and thanks for listening in, particularly...
Oh,
we haven't, okay.
No.
Talk over this.
He has another poem.
Yeah. Poem, yeah. I'll do a poem. This is a poem. All right, I got a poem.
So this is Charlemagne Palestine. Well, I suppose I should say that you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM.
I got a good poem.
And www.resonancefm.com on the net with this week's guest, Bob Parks, outsider Stalinist.
Yeah. I've got a poem I can read you. This is back in 76. This is when I started reading it. It's total crap, bad, because it does everything. I mean, it's really bad. It uses mixed metaphors and the whole thing, and it's terrible. But I'll do it anyhow. So this is it. Shall I read it out?
Yeah.
Okay. This is mine. God was alone. His mass, the sea of eternity, thundered forth from froth. Two tiny, solitary drops where his two tears splashed. Two seagulls sped to either side of the world. One with orange beak talked and gossiped over its aching heart. Accepted as one of the flock, its excretion fell on home ground. The other, more tortured, became a victim of a troubled mind, set to searching, looking into clouds for something. The first acted like a happily dancing tear with a song of classical clarity. The song became known as the joyful seagull. Altered and transformed with worry, the fearful searcher, looking with passion, was blown across the torrid conjunction known as the face of the earth. The seagull was ugly, gripped by love and destroyed. Through caring too much, the bird misjudged a wind pocket and was plummeted to the sea. Regaining consciousness, another's guise greeted his gaze. The two birds chirped momentarily the same tune. The floating flock above ushered the visitor away impassively, leaving the searcher with broken wing and without feathers to hobble its own way into oblivion. One had no spirit, the other no material things.
Sort of perhaps mention your forum again.
Okay, and I'm not sure quite how it's setting up because Sal's doing that, but it's basically a Tuesday, hopefully October, November, if not it'll have to be after Christmas, at Vutarina's, Tuesday from 5 till 10. And if you want to take part, anything that I've expressed you strongly disagree with and want to shoot it down or whatever you want to do or stimulate some idea from it or something, you're welcome, because everybody has equal say and everyone has what anyone says will be it.
So what is Vutorini's again?
It's, you go to Tower Hill. Oh, it's a continuation of the old Colony Club. But to get there, you go to Tower Hill, and it's on Prescott Street. Mm-hmm. It's, like, really good. It's just downstairs, yeah, along there, other ways. You can find it. Right. You look it up on the internet. Vutorini's. And it's nice. So, and let me plug Adam's book again, his latest part of the trilogy, The Reigns of the Transfinite. It's self-published because he can't get published. He initially started as bitter. Now he kind of likes the state of not being publishable. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the book?
It's the Reigns of the Transfinite.
But it won't be published?
It's self-published. If you go onto the... You're just Adam Daly, The Reigns of the Transfinite.
Adam Daly.
Yeah, what? You can get it through that.
Oh, you can see it online?
Yeah. Okay. You can order it. You can order a copy.
Fine.
You can buy it.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, self-published.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, it does exist then? It's, yeah, not, it's not unpublished.
No, he's published it about 3 months, 2 months ago, very recently. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Bob Parks, for coming in.
Pleasure.
One more time. And reciting poems. I don't know if you've got a quick poem or a quick song or something you could sort of go out with. This is Charlemagne Palestine.
Right.
In the background.
Okay, let me see. Have I got the words here? Let me see. My recent one. All right. Oh, gosh. I did. Right, just opened it. Hearing test. Didn't hear my call at the dentist for emergency abscess work. I had to get a later train and miss my appointment for a hearing test at the Royal Festival Hall. She said I'd made her day. So it was just the funniness of missing the call for the abscess in my ear at the dentist. And I was... going on to a hearing test at the Royal Festival Hall.
Yeah.
And that was the reason I missed the hearing test for the abscess in my ear at the
abscess
dentist.
In your ear?
No, in my tooth.
In your tooth?
I don't know.
You're having a hearing test for an abscess in your tooth?
No, I couldn't hear the dentist when they called my name out. And I missed the appointment for the thing because she said I came out. I know, I was waiting for her to come out, and she said I called from inside. But the point was, I was going on then for a hearing test at the Royal Festival Hall to address the problem. The reason why I missed the dental appointment, because she said it too quietly because I've got a hearing problem.
Right.
That was just that one. I don't know if I...
Okay.
There's a song I wrote to Mum. Let's see if I can find it, because I rather like that one. I wrote this song to Mum. See if I can make it up. No, I can't. I haven't got it here. I tell him a joke. Shall I tell him a joke? Right, this is a joke. This is, you've heard it before, but this honeymoon couple go to the Holy Land and they take the mother-in-law along with them. Our vicar told us this story, and she dies. And it's £3,500 to have the body sent back to England. For £150, she can be buried in the Holy Land. And they say, we'll take the £3,500. And the undertaker says, why? It's only £150 to have. 2,000 years ago, a man died here. 3 days later, he came back to life. I can't take a chance with the mother-in-law.
Yes, thank you for that, Bob.
All right.
I shouldn't laugh at that, really.
No, don't.
I'm laughing at you, I think.
That's right, yeah.
By Acast. Find us on iTunes, and if you like the show.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.